might have to jump in.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm Elisa Benson. I'm going to be chairing at this point. Just want to call this meeting to order, the meeting of the Animal Services Joint Powers Authority Board. And please ask the clerk to call the roll.
Do we have Chair Moreno in for Sarah Ryan? Vice Chair Benson?
Present.
Secretary Manning? Member Templeton?
Present.
Member Thole?
Present.
Member Rutherford?
Present.
Member Freitas?
Present.
Member Garcia?
Present.
And Member Freenan? Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move to, I'm not quite sure what the introductions is referring to today. Do you have any introductions?
I don't think we have any introductions.
Okay, great. We're going to move to our third item, which is consideration of late additions or changes to the agenda. Anything? No?
I have nothing.
Okay. With that, we're going to move to oral communications. This is the part of our meeting where any person may address the board of directors during our oral communications period. All oral communications should be directed to items or issues that would be within the jurisdiction of this board, but not on today's agenda. Board members will not take actions or respond immediately to oral communications presented, but may choose to follow up either individually or on a subsequent agenda. So, do we have anyone who'd like to make public comment today?
I'm going to get it off my mind to be first. My name is Nancy Newby, and I'm on the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter Foundation. I've been here before, but some of the members are new, and I have been with the foundation board since 2019. I've been the treasurer and just recently became the president of the foundation. And just as a quick refresher of what the foundation does, we are the 501c3 that helps support the shelter by fundraising and helping at events and whatnot. And we also belong to 5 of the local Chamber of Commerce's. So in almost everybody's district, we have a presence. I'm one of 9 members of the foundation that is a volunteer. We also have our executive director, Trent Halliburton. She was going to be here, but she's not here yet. And I did want to point out that on your consent agenda number 11, the gift from the foundation, much of that was based on a grant that NAW had applied for and secured. We have a couple of events coming up in your communities, and I'm hoping just to put it out there, we're doing the classic car show with the sheriff's department on Saturday, and we're also going to be in Watsonville next month. The beer, wine, and art walk with the city of Watsonville and the Pajaro Valley Chamber. And also another music for the animals at Santa Cruz Cidery in Watsonville. And this is an open invitation to contact us if you are having events to reach out to us, because we do like to be out in the community, whether it's running the beer garden that we're going to be doing in Capitola. They're not here. Food Truck Friday next month. And we just do a lot and like to be out and about educating the public about the services that the shelter provides. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, we all know how important you are to supporting animal services in our community. It makes a huge difference.
Morning. Hi.
addressed this board before, Gary Vincomo. I'm also on the board of directors of the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter Foundation. I'm vice president of the board. I also am current vice president and former president of the board of directors of Dientes Community Dental Care. I also served on the board of Monarch Community Services. And after spending the last 12 years of my career in the nonprofit sector, retired from the nonprofit world in this county in 2018. I'd say that way by way of introduction, but really just saying that I've had, by virtue of this work and my volunteer work, I've had the opportunity to not only be in front of this board, but other similar types of county boards and organizations, including our board of supervisors, advocating for the nonprofits that I support. And the message I just would like to pass along today is when you consider, and it's all about budgets, and it's all about everybody's looking, trying to get a decreasing piece of the pie. And I understand. And there's no end to the mission. And it's just an idea at the task at hand that you guys have at hand. Any steward of public taxpayer money, whether you're elected official, appointed official, just in the nonprofit sector, there are over 1,800 501c3s in our county. Over 1,800 registered 501c3s. Now, all the missions are all great, but one of the things I ask boards and groups like yourself to consider, not just the mission, because the mission is always there, but I ask you to consider the effectiveness of the organization, in this case, the animal shelter, the results that we're delivering the community, when you make decisions about how the budgets are going forward, and as we advocate for that, again, that ever-decreasing piece of the pie. So not just the mission of those of the organization, but also the effectiveness, and that's backed by data. And I'm happy to say that in terms of my support and my advocacy for this particular nonprofit, that the results are there, that this is a very effectively run organization in terms of the results and the service that we're delivering to the community. And I, as a taxpayer, that's what I want to see. And that's why I support these kinds of organizations. So thank you. I just appreciate that. So thank you very much. And just an example of it, again, it's just in terms of some of the success. Nancy mentioned earlier the gift that the foundation provide. I mean, just an example of the success of the foundation, that part of that gift came from a grant that wouldn't exist in the foundation. Didn't help assist in going out and get that. So that's the kind of thing that, again, I would ask that boards like yourself consider when looking at funding a decision. What's the effectiveness? What's not just what the mission is, or the service they're actually being delivered. So thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
So, my name is Jesse Williams. I have been a full-time animal care worker at the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter since February of 2022. I began volunteering in 2013 with WTLC. Prior to becoming a shelter staff member, I served as an isolation quarantine shelter site supervisor for unhoused individuals from April 2020 to February 2022. And I'm also active in the community, organizing PurrFest, an annual fundraiser around my birthday, supporting organizations including the Animal Shelter, Barrios Unidos, and the Santa Cruz Veterans Memorial Building. And I participate in Benepet, which is an independent fundraiser that happens at the jury room. Actually, I had one last night that was super successful, or yesterday, in between the rain. Through these experiences, I've seen that the Santa Cruz community deeply values its animal shelter. Met individuals who go out of their way to support the shelter on their own time. Our many volunteers provide meaningful support to both staff and animals, demonstrating the shelter's importance to the public. As you all are probably well aware of, the nature of animal shelter work is uniquely demanding. Research shows animal shelter workers face disproportionately high rates of burnout, secondary traumatic stress, and compassion fatigue, with more than 53% reporting high burnout and over 90% experiencing high levels of secondary traumatic stress. I can vouch for that. Additionally, workers in animal care and control roles face significantly elevated mental health risks, including suicide rates comparable to first responders. These realities underscore the need for a workplace culture that adequately reduces stress rather than contributes to it. At the same time, there's a significant disconnect between wages and the cost of living in Santa Cruz County. The average animal shelter worker in the area earns approximately $21 per hour, or around $43,000 annually. However, to afford a modest two-bedroom rental in Santa Cruz County, the town I was born in, a worker must earn approximately $81 an hour, which is not going to happen. It's more than three times current wage. This gap creates ongoing financial strain for full-time employees, particularly when wages are also must also cover health care, or you need to be full-time to receive your benefits. Full-time meaning that's all the time that you are working would cover your cost of life, which is disproportionate. Staff at all levels need comprehensive training, clear, defined roles, and appropriate staffing support. Investing in proper infrastructure, personnel, and compensation is essential to both employees' well-being and the humane care of animals. Santa Cruz County has an opportunity to address these issues through meaningful and sustained action, demonstrating its commitment to both its workers and its animals. I believe that to have a good workforce, you need good guidance, you need good management and good supervisors, but they also need good guidance and they need support. So I'm asking you to support our management so our management can support our supervisors, and then our supervisors in turn can support staff, and then staff can team up with the volunteers in the community to take care of these animals that deserve it. They can't advocate for themselves, so it's our job to advocate for them. And that's it. Thank you very much to everyone for being present and caring and taking your time.
Any additional public comment? All right, let's move to the next part of the agenda, the consent agenda. We have seven items on this agenda. I want to ask the board, does anyone have any questions about any of the items on the consent agenda?
No.
Can I get a motion regarding the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to ask the consent.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. With that, can I get a roll call? Or do we do a voice vote on consent, or do we do a roll call?
A voice just
okay.
Is.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And then we have a couple absentees. So of the members here, we have a unanimous vote.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to go to item 12 of the agenda of our on our regular agenda, and I'm going to pass it to our general manager, Amber, to give us her monthly oral or her oral report. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for being here. First of all, thank you for all those who spoke. I want to start off just by talking about some of the things we did in the community during the last period, during February and March. 187 owned cats and dogs benefited from our February animal balance clinic. So we did another affordable spay-neuter clinic. The next animal balance clinic will be June 26th through the 28th. We held two Healthy Pets for All clinics in which we helped 108 families in Watsonville and 95 families in Santa Cruz for a total of 228 dogs and 71 cats. Our volunteers and our staff worked closely to make those clinics happen for low-income pet owners. And these all, of course, feed into prevention programs, so that prevents the spread of disease out in the community, which reduces our costs and also reduces intake to the shelter. Now we've got our little hodgepodge of things. The Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter Foundation's Awkward Pet Portrait fundraiser wrapped up, and we had an absolutely wonderful exhibit at the Painted Cork on March 6th. It raised $7,600 for shelter operations.
On March 21st, the Rio Theater hosted the Top Dog Film Festival once again. Rippin' Rosie was our special guest. She's the surfing dog. And her dad came along and had a great message about positive training and how that builds bonds and builds relationships with dogs, which was great. And that event raised over $2,000. On February 19th, first responders rescued a houseless woman from flooding along the Pajaro River. She also had a red husky and five mixed breed puppies, very, very young puppies that were with her stranded on this little strand. And our animal control officer responded to the scene and rescued the hypothermic puppies, brought them back to the shelter for some treatment, and then the whole family went into foster care. Delta is what we named the mama dog, and her puppies have now, all but one of them, have been adopted. There's one puppy left named Harbor. She's a little dark brindle pup at the top left with white toes, and she's still looking for a home. But happy ending for all of them. We also had two strategic planning gatherings and a stakeholder survey with our consultant Sarah Cohen of Big Questions Collaborative. We had an in-person mission, vision, and values workshop on February 2nd and 3rd. We had a mission, vision, and values presentation via Zoom on March 6th. We also just had a priorities workshop with shelter leadership on April 1st. We have started planning for a community input session and a survey. And the draft 5-year strategic plan should be ready for board review in June. So at our June meeting, we hope to review strategic planning, our strategic plan. We also celebrated St. Pity's Week from March 11th through the 17th. That featured pity parties, beverage glasses, and beverage sales at a whole bunch of establishments all around the county. I want to give a special shout out to both the foundation and Dana, our accountant. Dana, wave. Dana's really big about making public appearances, but Dana and Nancy work their tails off to make Kitty's Week happen, and so I really want to express appreciation. We literally have businesses like contacting us wanting to be a part of it because it is so popular in the community. So, people buy bright green sweatshirts, so it's kind of cool. anyway, so that event raised close to $15,000 for shelter operations, and we sold out of all the green merchandise, which is awesome. On March 14th, the Santa Cruz Boardroom and Santa Cruz Apparel hosted their Capitola Classic Skateboarding Competition at the Capitola Mall. And together with Santa Cruz Subaru and the Social Club Tattoo, they raised over $8,000 to support shelter programs, and they also had Huckleberry in their picture, which I think helped get him adopted, which is pretty cool. And then in conjunction with the Capitola Classic event, the shelter staff reached out to local artists Rosebud Wild and Schwa Smith, who generously created an original design that we're calling Kickflip Kitty for some of our shelter merchandise. And that's been selling very well. We had some at the Benepet fundraiser yesterday. Our clinic team provided spay-neuter surgery for 161 shelter animals and 56 owned animals in the shelter. In the shelter clinic during February and March, those 56 owned animals were all part of our prevention efforts for low and no income pet owners. They also oversaw the care of a really charming gray cat that we named Ryan Seacrest, who came in with a terrible injury to his hip. We found a fracture at the top of his femur, and so we had our extra mile fund, which is something that the Shelter Foundation raises funds for. With the help of the extra mile fund, we were able to send him to specialty surgery and have an FHO surgery, a femoral head osteotomy. And he recovered partly in the shelter and then partly in foster home, and then he was adopted almost immediately because he's like a super charming cat. Anyway, so that was one of our cool cases in the clinic. Moving on to our statistics. Intake of live non-wild animals decreased once again to 626. That was during February and March. We are kicking back up again. But that was that 626 intake of live non-wild animals was 57 fewer than last period and 42 fewer than last year. So it feels like we're making a little bit of progress on prevention. Both stray dog and cat intake were significantly reduced, but we had an increase in protective custody and safe holds this year over last year. We also took in several more animals this year for the animal control low-cost spay-neuter outreach since we had some capacity in our surgery clinic. We adopted out 96 fewer cats last period, most likely because we didn't have any kittens and not even very many adult cats from which people could choose. We also adopted out 22 fewer dogs than last period, and our overall adoption numbers were down by 28 animals compared to the same period last year. Our adoption rate dropped from 52.5% of total outcomes to 44.3% this period, but that's actually consistent with what happens around this time of year. Things kind of slow down after the holidays and as we head into spring. We did have one adoption special, February 6th through the 15th, which resulted in 64 total adoptions. Returns to owner were down slightly from last year, but the percentage of outcomes was the same at 32.2%. Total transfers were almost identical to last year, but the percentage of total outcomes was up a bit from 13.5% to 15.2% because we transferred a bunch of young rabbits to Rabbit Haven. Thankfully, they were willing to take them. Humane euthanasia for medical or behavioral reasons, again, was very low this period at 7.8% of our total outcomes during this period. And our intake numbers, as I mentioned, have been starting to take their springtime upward turn, and as of yesterday we have 47 cats and kittens and 13 dogs and puppies in foster care. So there are still some kittens and puppies being popping up in the community, and they're ending up in our care. They're all in foster right now. With regard to staffing, Shelby Richens was promoted from Extra Help Animal Care to become our new animal health specialist. We hired August Robinette and Catherine Hare as Extra Help Animal Services Assistants, so client services. They have been working full-time as they get trained in. And what that has also allowed us to do was we were able to transfer Eva Berberich in client services, who was a new hire. She was hired on in a substitute role. She has now been made permanent. And Annie Pierce was recently promoted to RVT, and both of them are now permanent roles instead of substitute roles. We did receive 9 qualified applications for animal control officer, and interviews are being conducted, in fact, kind of right now. I think we just did our first round of interviews, and we're about to do our second round with the top candidates. Volunteers contributed 2,482 hours, or 88.6 volunteer hours each day during February. And 2,370 hours during March. That's 76.4 volunteer hours a day. So we've had amazing volunteer support. We also requested, because I was curious, we requested information from our partners about how many community service and work release hours we received during 2025, the calendar year. We had 480 hours of community service work and 2,104 hours of work release. So that's about 263 8-hour shifts. So we do rely on work release and community service workers to assist our animal care operations. After extending the opening, we did receive a couple of qualified RVT applicants and are going to be conducting interviews next week. Is it this week or next week? It might be tomorrow. I think tomorrow.
I don't know.
We might be doing something.
I don't know.
We'd have to check in with Dr. Maris. And then if we can successfully hire for that vacancy in the RVT position, that is going to use up the last of our incentive retention bonuses that were approved a couple of years ago. And so I would ask that the board consider sometime this year, consider whether we can approve a modification or an update to that retention program for RVTs. They are extremely hard to find and extremely hard to recruit and keep. So we would, just in case we end up having a vacancy in the RVT position, it would be helpful if we had another incentive package approved sometime in the next year. When it comes to operations and facilities, we are, Rudy, our animal care manager, is trying to work on some recurring issues. We have issues with our automatic watering system and also with our slider doors in our dog kennels. They are just getting old, and so the cables are wearing out, so we're constantly trying to replace those and fix both of those items. And we are getting closer to a new roof for the annex. We're working with County General Services. They've gotten bids and are going to be selecting a contractor for that, and the work should be completed hopefully in May. On that project, and then General Services is also working with us to start planning for our barn replacement and considering the longer term plans for the annex. Finally, as was included in the correspondence we received, and JPA Council responded to a mass cease and desist letter from the nonprofit Fix Our Shelters organization. We have not had any further correspondence or requests from that organization to this point. I also submitted a comment. I just wanted to make you aware. I did submit a comment last week at the request of the California Special Districts Association to the California Air Resources Board to urge them to support an amendment to the proposed legislation to exempt all emergency response and support vehicles from the zero emissions requirements. We're very concerned that would be a very difficult situation if we had to replace our animal control trucks with zero emission vehicles. So I did submit a comment to the CARB on that issue. I think that wraps up my oral report.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions from any board members regarding general manager's report? And do we need to have public comment on that? Any public comment on the general manager's report?
I'm excited to hear about the repairs to the sliders and the water bowls.
It's going to be an ongoing thing.
Yes. It wears on staff when we're have, for example, a kennel with six puppies in it, and we have volunteers come crying because there is poopy water over the entire floor of the kennel due to issues that staff is aware are continuous and have been quote-unquote repaired over and over and over again, and repeating the same things with expecting different results is the definition of insanity. It already feels crazy at the shelter. So it'd be great to have those issues resolved. I mean, it just seems like a waste of time to have a manager doing small maintenance things when it's not even being fixed. And you're going there as staff, just trying to have a good day, and then you cut yourself on a little piece of wire that you've said for months, this is an issue. Or you show up and there's dogs throwing up duct tape because they were chewing on a fix that had happened. That's my spiel. Thank you for listening.
All right, we're going to move to...
I would like to back Jesse on this. 2 weeks ago, at about 7 a.m., a volunteer showed up crying. And she said she's been a volunteer for 15 years at the shelter. But she said she didn't get any sleep because she was really worried about an eight-week-old puppy that was living in a soggy condition because of the leaky water that was draining out of the dish. And it's been a problem for about 3 months. But finally, I think that 2 weeks ago when this volunteer brought it to attention that she was going to, and she was actually asking me who to contact, it escalated it to the point to where it was fixed within 48 hours. And what Jesse was saying, the duct tape is, the loose wires that were slicing us as shelter workers and injuring the animals at times, were fixed with duct tape, and the animals were chewing the duct tape off, and it took multiple requests just to sufficiently fix that, which also happened last week as things were escalated. So I definitely back Jesse. You know, our job as animal care workers is to advocate and take good care of the animals. I'm in no way, shape, or form qualified to do any type of maintenance, repairs, or such. And at times, even I'm asked for solutions, or if I could send an Amazon link for a part to a gate that maybe exists rather than duct tape. Then what that does is it takes my time and my energy away from taking care of animals, as well as, you know, if work release doesn't show up, or if there's no work release on the schedule, I find myself doing their tasks, which is, you know, laundering dishes, such as yesterday, there was no work release. I had zero contact with animals or giving any animal care. So there definitely can be, you know, for the most part, the shelter is run in a magnificent way, and we definitely make a lot of effort and advocate for the animals, but when there are shortages, they're definitely felt amongst the staff and can affect us, for sure. But I just wanted to back what Jesse said.
Thank you. Any further public comment?
I did follow up, if I could, to Amber's report, just in terms of the issue around the mandate around zero emission vehicles. Do we have is there an understanding of what the budget issue or the delta between going to a zero emission vehicle? Number one, is that going to be a 20% more than our vehicles now, gas powered vehicles, and can those vehicles do the job that we need them to do? Those questions make sense? Do we know that yet? You know,
the cost of converting
from
petrol.
Is that going to be, from a budget standpoint, is that going to be, you know, an increase to the budget significantly? 10% more per vehicle? Do we have any sense of that? And do we have any sense of, can these low emission vehicles actually do the work that they need to be performing on?
That is not research that I have done to this point. We know that conventional vehicles are running, the ones that we just ordered are $110,000. And so we have the pickup chassis might be slightly less than that, but as far as vehicles that are powerful enough and potentially get us to places that we often need to go, dirt roads in the mountains and that kind of thing, with caging on the back or being able to pull a trailer, those are all significant concerns, and that's why I sent them a comment, because I do have concerns that we would not be able to respond in the way that we need to respond.
Right, with the same level of services, yeah.
With zero emission vehicles. And it would be, my suspicion is that those vehicles will be more expensive, and then finding organizations that or businesses that can then customize them to put caging on the back is another issue that takes up the cost.
Any additional public comment?
Crickets.
I know, another crickets. I'm like, what the heck?
Actual crickets.
All right. Well, we are now to. Is there more you wanted to talk about?
No.
Okay. We are now to regular agenda item 13. This is where we are going to be considering the general manager's proposed budget for fiscal year 26-27. And I'm going to pass it to our general manager to walk us through. Before that, I just want to say, so this is just us considering. We are not making a decision on this today. This is our opportunity to ask questions, provide any additional direction for what we would want to see come back at the meeting in June.
Is that someone's phone?
Yeah, if someone's phone is chirping.
No, I think it's actually a cricket.
It's an actual cricket.
Yeah.
Who brought their pet cricket? That is too funny. I'm going to have to check general services. There's a truck, there's a cricket trap down here. Our board meeting down here tomorrow.
Okay. I just have a short presentation regarding the budget. Hopefully you all had a little bit of an opportunity to take a look at it prior to the meeting. So what I'd like to do with this presentation is just present our recommended budget for your consideration, discuss the operational impacts of budget decisions, respond to budget and or operational questions, and get some feedback for development of a final proposed budget for our June 8th, 2026 meeting. So what we have recommended is a budget with a 7% increase to member contributions. We've also shown in the spreadsheet options of 3% and 5% increases for member contributions. We believe that the 7% increase that we've recommended helps to support staff, consider some of the capital projects and the fleet needs that we have, and limits reserve spending, which we feel is important because we've been spending out of reserves a lot of our history. We also feel that it honors the community's trust and the support that they have of our programs, and that it recognizes prevention as a cost control measure. At the bottom there, you can see there is a graph showing the average increases. Over the last 10 years, the average increase has been about 6.7%, so the 7% recommended increase is sort of in line with that 10-year average. You can see there's a significant dip in 2021 for COVID. Everybody took a budget hit, and ours was a decrease of 10% in member contributions, and we've been working on that. We've made better progress in recent years, and we want to try to prevent backsliding too much if we possibly can. We do recognize that budgets are extremely tight heading into the next couple of years. So the main increase leader for our budget is staffing. Salaries and benefits increases by $170,000 or almost $171,000 over our last year's budget, and actually $422,000 over our estimated actuals. So that is a little bit confusing, but the reason that our estimated actuals are so low is because we had four mid-level positions vacant most of the past fiscal year. We had our administrative analyst position vacant for a number of months, our volunteer coordinator, an RVT position, and an ACO position vacant over the course of this past year, which has had a significant impact on staff and how we've been able to just kind of barely keep our heads above water, let alone make good progress. We try to keep making progress anyway. Our administrative analyst and volunteer coordinator positions have been filled, and that has vastly improved our administrative function. I was not able to keep up on my own. Our RVT and ACO positions will be filled before the close of this fiscal year, and that should hopefully demonstrably increase our enforcement and prevention capacity. There's Jesse. A little more on that. Some of the increase is due to negotiated agreements that contributed to that increase. So we have a COLA for all staff that took effect as of October 1st. We had the addition of Step 6 for tenured general rep staff. That impacted 15 employees, I believe. The addition of Steps 6 and 7 for middle management positions. And staffing has been a major challenge for many years at the shelter. We feel that this increase is a positive for the shelter. It is a needed investment in the retention of skilled staff and to try to reduce burnout and increasing our ability to innovate and improve our programs and operations. For facilities and fleet, our proposed budget does include carryover allocations from what was previously approved for two vehicles that we currently have on order. Unfortunately, they haven't arrived yet, but because of all of the stuff going on that's prevented people from being able to get steel and aluminum, for example, or made it more difficult. This budget does not include any funding for additional vehicles that we do need, because as I've mentioned before, we do have an aging fleet. We are working with County GSD to improve and or replace the barn and the annex. Those facilities are needed to provide expected services. Contingency funding might be needed to support some planning costs for those projects. When it comes to reserve spending, we would like to not hit that quite as hard. So the 7% increase would result in $380,000 in reserve spending. A 3% increase would result in $566,000 in contingency spending. And we, like I said, we don't want to lose recent progress that we've started to make on reducing that reserve spending. The last couple of years, we have not had to spend out of reserves. We will continue, I will continue, and Dana will continue to try to be as fiscally conservative as we can be when it comes to our expenses, and keep a close eye on those. We have closed the last several years, we have closed lower than our expected budget. So we will keep trying to do that, to keep spending under control and keep it very focused on what actually results in the best prevention and services that we can provide. We are a trusted and supported organization. In 2025, 250 monthly volunteers contributed over 25,000 hours of work. We received over $590,000 in donations for operations and programs. Thousands of community pets and families were served through our outreach and in-shelter programs, and even our branded merchandise is very popular. And that is, we really appreciate the trust and the support that the community has in us. We work very hard to earn it and to maintain it. We also receive a lot of donation support. So in calendar year 2025, we received $1.8 million in donations. Of that, however, 69% is restricted for use for either limited or designated for a specific program. Our most supported programs are our Planned Pethood and Extra Mile programs. Both of those are pretty resource-intensive programs that are sort of over and above the foundational programs of an animal shelter, but that those are programs that we offer, again, as a cost control measure, because anything we do related to prevention helps prevent animal intake, which prevents, which reduces expenses. And the other thing that these programs do is they're a really important trust builder for the community. So although we don't like to talk a whole lot about live outcome percentages, the fact is that when we are able to save more animals, that does build increased community trust and support. And that's just sort of the way it is in animal welfare. If you can euthanize fewer animals, the public will trust you more with your input and your resources that you offer to them. And then you tend to have greater preventative impact as well. So we do consider the public support both an honor and a valuable resource, and we work very hard to earn it. And we don't want to undermine that by not being able to provide the services that people have come to expect. We do want to continue to improve our staffing. As I reported, we now have two extra help folks in our client services unit, which is extremely helpful. And we are now able to hire an animal control officer again. Those staffing improvements can help us with improved efficiencies and increased ability to participate in prevention and life-saving programs. And again, it's sort of a cycle. The more we can do of that, the more community support we get. And that, again, allows us to just continue into the future. So we want to continue to build on the trust and the support that we have from the community. And we believe that the requested budget with a 7% increase from members will help us do that. So this is the sort of outlay of what that looks like. You can see there's the 3% increase column, the 5% increase column, and the 7% increase column broken down by member contributions. This $326,265 increase is less than what our, as I mentioned near the beginning, the $400,000-ish increase in salary and benefits costs that we're facing this coming year with the negotiated settlement, the negotiated agreements, and so on. So we feel that this is important to be able to support the staff in the way that we need to keep folks working for us and compensated at a reasonable, if not great, level. And there's a very cute puppy.
Thank you for that. Before we give the board the opportunity to ask questions, let's do public comment on this.
Sure.
Any public comment on the proposal for the fiscal year 27 budget?
And I should mention that this budget does not add any additional staff. Unfortunately, we have the same number of unfunded positions. So we have 31 total full-time positions approved and funded, and we stick with that same number. The unfunded positions do include maintenance. There is a position that's out there in the world, but it's just not funded. And it also includes a couple of part-time animal control officers, half-time animal control officers, and a program development manager position that remains unfunded.
Okay, with that, I'm gonna bring it back to the board for questions. Any questions? This is an opportunity to ask questions, but also provide feedback so Amber and Helen can really refine their proposal for us to consider taking action on in June. Yes, ma'am.
Could we go back one slide, just for sake of conversation? And then one of my questions was, you mentioned vehicle and vehicle replacement schedule. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit more to how that would be reflected or not reflected in this budget?
Essentially, in this proposed budget, this only rolls over the amounts that we had already approved and budgeted. So we have two vehicles that are currently in production, and they've been delayed in production. They are taking a lot longer than we expected. They were supposed to be delivered in February and April, and here we are in April, and we haven't gotten either one of them.
One of them for a year, right? It's been on order.
Yes, over
for
a year.
Over a year. For whatever reason.
There's only one caging manufacturer that makes caging for vans, and we wanted to diversify our fleet a little bit by having vans instead of truck chassis for the urban and suburban work that we do. We are going to need our next vehicles, if and when we can fund them, will be pickup trucks again with the caging boxes on the back of them. So these ones have taken a long time, and they have their costs have increased since we ordered them. So because of tariffs and other things that have gone into effect out in the larger economy. So this does not include any budget for additional vehicles. It just covers the vehicles that we've already got on order. So we'll finally hopefully be able to pay for them either by the end of this fiscal year or in next fiscal year.
And then for moving forward, vehicle replacement plan, it would be good to have, you know, a 2 to 5 year view of what that is. So if we're looking at budgets each year, folding in funds to build out that sort of capital investment that we would need.
Yeah, the shelter. Yeah, the shelter does not, when I started, it didn't have a vehicle, it didn't have a fleet replacement plan of any kind. We still don't really have one, but we've just started plowing ahead. But yeah, that's something we need to develop, is a fleet replacement. Essentially, we have four vehicles that need to be replaced. We've got two 2008 trucks and two 2011 trucks, and then a 2017 SUV. And so they are ripe for replacement, and our maintenance costs are going up and up all the time on those trucks to keep them running. But yeah, we are again hoping to get our vans sometime soon. Look at Dana, see if we haven't gotten any updates. So yeah, we're hoping to get our vans fairly soon, which will help a lot. And then we'll make a plan for coming years for the new trucks.
Any other questions? I have a couple questions. I guess one question I had, and I'm on packet page 41 in Exhibit A, is that if we look at your estimated actuals for this fiscal year, and I think you spoke to this quite a bit, that because of the significant level of salary savings you've had throughout the year, and maybe also this not having to do basically fleet outlay, you're projecting ending the year, you know, with some pretty you know, I'm just doing eyeball math, $500,000 less than what your adopted budget was. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, our adopted budget, we had anticipated a deficit of $470,000, and we're anticipating that we're going to end the year in the positive.
So you won't be using your contingency reserves dollars from last year?
No. Correct. And we did not the year before either. The prior year we ended in the black as well by about $155,000. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, we have been practicing a lot of, conservative management of our resources, and we've also had a lot of staffing shortages, which has been...
And we don't expect to have that level of salary savings and staffing shortage. Plus, we have, as you said, a much, much needed investment in our workforce through COLAs, market adjustments, all of those things to address that so much of our public sector workforce is dealing with, of living in a very high cost of living zone, and those kinds of adjustments have been made. I guess one thing that would be helpful for me, just a little bit, is understanding, so we're ending better the last 2 years, basically being able to utilize the revenues from member contributions and leaving more, effectively, in savings.
Correct.
So when I look to, I know there's a schedule somewhere in here that talks about sort of that fund balance over time. I'm just curious, this at the 7%, we would be utilizing, I think you had there about, what was it, $350,000 from your savings account. And we don't project the same, under this scenario, the same kind of salary savings, because the idea is you're going to be fully staffed. Okay. So I just wanted to kind of walk through that. The other question I have is, can you talk a little bit more about where we would see in this budget that the facilities and the facilities work? And is that a rebudget? Is that a carryover? Or is that a new expenditure?
We have not budgeted anything at this point for that. So we have... the foundation is doing some fundraising. There's a gala coming up in September that will hopefully be able to help with some of the cost of barn replacement. And the foundation has a pot of money that was what we referred to as phase two development funds that were raised in support of doing a remodel that happened in 2021 and 22. So there is some seed money sitting there for the eventual project to rehabilitate or rebuild the annex. So those are separate funds. A lot of that would be donations and possibly grants, but we've not laid that out in the budget.
Okay, so we don't have a funded facility plan as part of this budget.
We have, I don't want to say we don't have a plan, because there is a facility plan. There is a facility plan that was developed with the I don't know when it was developed, in 2000, it was a long time ago, but that has a facility replacement and equipment replacement and all that kind of schedule. So we do have that, and that's sort of what our contingency fund and our what's the name of the fund I'm thinking of? Capital improvement. So we do have a capital fund that we try to fund each year. And there are some mandatory allocations that we make both to our contingency fund and to our capital fund each year. So Dana can probably speak more intelligently than I can about that, or more, with the right words.
Sounds good. So that would be something, just as we look at a final budget, I would want you guys to draw our attention to in your schedules. Like, if I look at this right now, I'm seeing a pretty low And I'm just curious, is that in the building and improvements account? So just, I would want to just sort of see that a little bit. Like, what are we, we've heard about issues with facilities, just where does that get reflected in your budget for the next year? Just so in June, be sure to be able to speak to that. So with that would be my question. I'm going to sort of ask board members a little bit about, it looks like a 7% increase in member contributions is less than what the increase was last year, correct? Last year
correct.
Was a 10%. And jurisdictions need to be able to go back home and understand what that means in terms of their what their budgets are, I'm assuming, for these expenses, for this cost of service moving forward. I need to do the same thing to understand, you know, what were we expecting and planning for in the county's budget. I think people know the county in particular, as a safety net provider in this community, has a whole bunch of additional costs because of changes in federal and state policy that is pretty unique to the county versus city jurisdictions. At the same time, the county has also made a sizable investment in our workforce and addressing undercompensation issues. So we're scrapping a bit. I appreciate that this is less than 10, but it's certainly something I'm gonna need to, you know, go back to my budget manager and talk about what does that mean in terms, and we're the largest payer. So, it certainly is a big deal for us. Any feedback from any of the other jurisdictions?
Yeah, sure. I think we're in a similar boat. We're taking this back to our team and looking at what this looks like because the 10% was a stretch for us last year, I know, and we had been given a status quo budget this year, even more so a status quo budget. Because, you know, while the county is facing very big challenges, there is still some trickle effect in the cities, and so we have had increases in costs that weren't anticipated. And we've also been given a status quo budget for contracts, which would be the typical 3%, while having just completed negotiations and really invested in our workforce. So I think we're kind of in a similar boat where we need to go back and see where in this 3-7% we have budgeted when, you know, the status quo is what we were given, and we started our budgeting in January, February, so we're sort of closing out what we prepared for.
I would agree with that, and then my question is, in terms of, you have a 3, a 5, and a 7, how is it, are we having a consensus on what we're agreeing to if, once we have our...
Well, I think that
feedback
that's,
from our city managers or
well, our obviously that will be the decision that this board has to decide. We don't each get to pick what we're willing to pay.
Right.
We would be saying, you know, member contributions will go up by this amount, and each of us are expected to pay that amount. I mean, a decision that's not on here is zero. Right? What if we said, nope, we got to hold member contributions.
You noticed I left that out?
Yeah, I did notice that. if we held member contributions at current level, what would that scenario look like? What would that mean in terms of dipping into reserves, into that ending fund balance? I mean, you don't get to keep doing, you know, as we have to also think about what that means for the shelter, for the services, because we are in a really positive trajectory in terms of outcomes for animals, outcomes for staff, and, you know, there's everything right with the old adage, you get what you pay for. If we pay less, we get less, and those have outcomes. So I guess I'm curious, do people want to see in the June presentation what a 0% increase looks like? Or are people comfortable with 3, 5, or 7%? the team needs to understand what this board is open to looking at. Because if everyone's happy with paying more, then I'm not going to ask them to do work to show a different scenario. So
I think it would be advantageous to pull the zero. I'm pretty sure that all of us in here are being asked to cut from our budget right now. So maybe exploring that's a viable option right now.
Anyone else?
I would say that's probably...
We're not making a decision.
Sure. That's going to be one of the questions that I'm going to be asked is, well, what happens if we do nothing? So it'd be nice to at least have that information so I can bring it back and say, well, here's what's going to occur if we have a zero going forward.
Okay. So just the other thing to keep in mind is obviously we don't have another meeting before June. I don't know what our capacity for providing the board intermeeting materials, but that, you know, that may be something that we would like to see. So people could understand that. And I think we need to understand like what that does, because the expectation is we're not asking for you to make cuts. What that means is you're spending from the savings, you're spending from reserves. And we all need to be accountable. I don't know, do we have any policies around maintaining certain levels of reserves within the authority?
I think we don't have a requirement for maintaining a certain amount in reserves. We do have a requirement to allocate, to add to the reserves, if I am remembering correctly.
Okay, yeah. So I think that's something we all need to understand in our fiduciary duty for this organization, not just where we're coming from.
Yeah, so the budget does reflect input into our reserves. So, and it's less than, help me out here, Dana, if you know where I'm going with this. I think we're called on to put in 8%. It's not that high. Into contingencies,
4%.
Not 4%, thank you. Into contingencies each year. So as our budget increases, our contingency input increases as well.
So yeah, I see that is right now it's $561,000, $562,000, if I round up. So, but at the same time, we're assuming that we're going to be spending
out of it
$350,000 of that. Or, I guess that's my question. You know, we're not spending from the existing savings bank, or are we? And then we're adding it back, so we're not.
Yeah, we'd be spending from existing savings.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I think that would all be helpful, and we can all go back knowing that that's a conversation we'll have with our finance teams and with our city managers and respective boards, but having some of those details for that meeting, even if nothing else than to be able to make the decision at that meeting of what does that look like, what is that number of 4% at that versus what's being taken out, would all be really important to have for that decision. And I agree with at least adding the 0% option, though, you know, in our conversations, at least for our jurisdiction, because we're at a status quo budget, anything that we increase, whether it's 1%, 2%, 3%, or 7%, we would need to absorb from somewhere else. So then we're looking at where else are we cutting, what else are we reducing in order to meet that percent increase for this program.
Okay.
So any other questions or comments from the board on item 13? Okay. We are gonna, since this was just, we probably don't need to do a vote. Because we were just getting briefed on something. There were no recommended actions. All right, great. We're going to move to item 14, which I need to actually read. This is approved transfer of the Ruth P. Steff Trust Fund totaling 1.1 $843,750 to an investment account to be managed as a perpetual endowment for SCCAS. Please take it away.
Yeah, so in late October, we were notified that we were receiving a trust, a very significant trust, and we were advised that the final amount was going to be $1.8 million. At the December meeting, the board unanimously approved a plan to apply some of that trust funding to fund two temporary two-year full-time positions at an annual cost of $180,000-ish. In late December, our counsel advised us that the trust actually included a single phrase to establish endowments in the memory of the trustor that she felt indicated that the trust needed to be managed not as an unrestricted gift, but actually as an interest-bearing endowment. And so we reached out to a trust specialist attorney and got input on that. We shared the documentation with Deborah Malkin, who is a certified specialist in estate planning, probate, and trust law. She confirmed that the Ruth P. Staff Trust language needs or indicated that it needs to be managed as an endowment, and therefore the staff, we didn't seek to recognize the trust as revenue in the February meeting, and we did not proceed with the approved temporary staffing. So the whole trust has been received. And below, I included a summary of the recommendations provided by Ms. Malkin regarding what should be done with the fund. Basically, we need to sort of extract the fund and put it into an interest-bearing account, and then the interest-bearing account should be managed by a financial manager, a trust manager, and then over the years, we would only spend out of interest from that fund. So, and they've recommended 7% or less generally, but it depends on how much the trust actually earns. So that is how, you know, that's sort of the definition of an endowment, and the idea is that it is to last forever, to sort of be able to have funds come out of that annually in perpetuity from the Ruth P. Staff Trust. So what we are, the suggestions that were made were that we select a financial advisor to work on this account, to set up an account with an appropriate name. It needs to be named after Ruth P. Staff. And so we need to have, and then we will annually seek approval. We will report out the earnings on the account, and then we will seek approval from the board to allocate that funding to some cause or another, some effort or another. And so 7% on this amount would be about $130,000, just to give people a sense of what we're talking about on an annual basis. So hopefully the background that's provided in item number 14 will provide, you know, provides enough information. What we're seeking today is simply a vote of yes or no regarding directing the staff to identify an appropriate fund manager and move that funding into an endowment type of investment account.
Before we go to public comment, any questions from the board around this change in understanding and the direction to staff to then implement this donation as an endowment? Any questions from any of you? Okay, before I go to public comment, I want to ask, then when spending the interest, is that unrestricted, or were there any restrictions in terms of?
There were not any restrictions on spending from the interest.
Okay, so that could be considered effectively a general revenue, operating revenue moving forward.
Correct. Yeah, but that would not take place until a year of interest has been
certainly
earned.
Certainly. And obviously you want to utilize it in the, you know, best way to continue to get these kinds of donations. I mean, it's an incredibly incredible gift.
Yeah.
Incredible gift from this family. Yes, ma'am.
So it did say that it would need to be managed by a financial firm, and I believe it allows for paying management of that fund to the financial firm, would that be out of that endowment, or would that have to be separate costs?
Yeah, generally that's a percentage of the amount that's being managed. Yeah, I think it varies a little bit among financial managers, but yes, it would come out of the interest.
Funds.
Yeah.
Okay, before I bring it back for us to vote on the staff's recommended actions, we'll have public comment on this item. Any public comment? All right, seeing no public comment, I would love to hear a motion around approving the staff recommendation as drafted. Motion? Second?
I'll second that.
All right. Well, with that, all in favor of approving the staff recommendation regarding the Ruth P. Staff Trust and having it be managed as a perpetual endowment and selecting a firm manager?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item 15, is item to for us as board members to consider a special meeting, potentially for a closed session on the topic of our fabulous general manager's annual evaluation. Chair Ryan asked for this as she was not able to be here today. And really the issue here is, would we like to meet prior to the June 8th meeting for a closed session to discuss our darling, wonderful general manager's annual evaluation, and then probably take final action at that June 8th meeting? Am I getting that close?
Yeah, I think either one would be fine. I think I'm just not, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Would, you don't just be whether to have a special meeting or not.
Right.
Or just to postpone it.
So, well, I think there was something in here around, someone is going to be out of the office, right?
I am going to be out of the office,
right.
Yes.
So doesn't have any impact. Do people feel like it's important to have a separate conversation prior to a final conversation on the 8th, or would you be comfortable with us having a closed session on the 8th, discussing, and then very likely, and then we just finish this matter of the general evaluation?
So I think generally the closed session to do my performance review occurs at the end of the April meeting. And so this is basically, and generally there's not a meeting prior to that to
okay,
the discussion,
so it's
and
the
yep, it's usually one and done. It's just that it couldn't take place at this meeting because Chair Ryan wasn't going to be here, so she wanted the board to decide whether or not to have a special session just to do that, to have a closed session, or to just
wait,
leave it for the
well.
June 8th
is there
meeting.
Any issue from your standpoint with us waiting until June?
I don't have any issue either
okay.
way. I think the board had previously requested that part of my evaluation include sort of a 360 review, and so that's what Chief Ryan was doing, and has done, and so that may allow for a little more time to get more feedback from more people. The June 8th meeting may be beneficial in that sense.
Okay. Before, unless there are any questions or comments, I'm going to put it out for public comment, and then we can make our decision whether we're going to do an extra meeting or handle it all on June 8th. Any public comment on this item? All right. Well, with that, just discussion on the board. Is there a preference? What would people's preference be? And then we can just give that direction. Want to just do it all in one on June 8th?
My assumption is it'd be a lot easier to get
this than trying to schedule.
Add a little time than to find a new date.
Okay. I don't think we need to take a vote on that. We will just cover this, defer the item to the regular meeting on June 8th. And there'll be more time for more input. So that sounds great. All right, well, that is the end of our regular agenda. Are we ready to adjourn this meeting?
I guess I just wanted to open it up in case there was any discussion or questions about what was included in correspondence, and whether anybody needed any clarification about any of that. We received a cease and desist letter from an organization called Fix Our Shelters. That was a mass mailing basically sent out to shelters all across California. Our council, Kara Townsend, responded and essentially requested them to provide specific. It was very much a form letter. It didn't even have our name, our shelter's name, in the letter, in the body of the letter. They hadn't replaced the "your name here" section. So it was very much a mass mailing. It does serve as notice that that there are people who pay attention to things like limiting intake or not providing sufficient notice prior to euthanizing animals to potential rescue organizations. And so it does, it's just a helpful reminder that people do pay attention to the work that we do and how we do it. And it also sort of draws renewed attention to Hayden's Law, which was a law that was enacted in California, I don't even remember what year, 2006, maybe six, yeah. And that was a big deal because it pushed a lot of changes on shelters that were very difficult to manage, and a lot of them were none of them were ever funded. So it is some challenging legislation. Some of it has been literally challenged, and the challenges have been upheld. Other parts of it haven't necessarily been fully challenged, but there are groups out there that are paying attention and might sort of bring these things up at any point. But I appreciate Ms. Townsend's very quick and excellent response to that, and the board's ongoing support of our standing as a socially conscious shelter that remains open intake for our community.
Thank you for that. Any questions on the correspondence that the general manager spoke to? Okay, well, I think we are ready to adjourn. So thank you, everyone. Our next meeting is Monday, June 8th. Is it here or is it?
It is here.
It is here?
Yes. Okay. Here or upstairs. I don't know if upstairs is going to be.
Hopefully it's upstairs.
We'll have microphones.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
It's upstairs in our new chambers. So, okay. Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.